You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 36 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I am your host, Dion Morales, and I am joined by the average Joe, Marcel Manzano.
Who's that guy?
Nate Moore, call sign Chatter.
Dice hat for life. What?
And the Canadian national champion, Bohan Lee.
Hey, guys.
So the plan for today is to talk about Canadian Nationals, and we're going to take a look at our playbook versus Miranda, as well as make some meta predictions and answer some listener voicemails.
Unlock the hologram.
All right, guys. So the plan here is to dive straight into Canadian Nationals. And Bohan, we're going to start with you, man. First, I want to say congratulations for winning.
Thank you very much.
Yay!
Does it feel good?
Yeah, that was great. So it was, it was a little tricky getting into it. I think I'll talk about this a little bit later, but you know, I woke up the next day and just couldn't believe it. And it was quite a while to set in.
That's awesome, dude. Well, so, you know, at least nationally, or I guess really X-Wing has become global, right? So globally, people don't know your name. So I figured I would be the first one to jump on the wagon and say, all right, let's figure out who this Bohan guy is.
Excellent.
So Bohan, where are you from?
So I live in London, Ontario. This is not the famous London. It's sort of a smaller town. We actually do have a Thames River. And we have like a Covent Garden market as well. But no, it's a smaller London. It's actually halfway between Detroit and Toronto, if that gives you a sense for where it is. I actually grew up in Boise, Idaho. So I'm actually an American citizen, but I was definitely repping Canada for Canadian Nationals.
Oh, okay. All right.
Wait, American citizen, that's repping...
Yeah, no, I'm repping Canada. I've got a Canadian PR, you know. The word A has creeped into my vocabulary, and the letter U has been popping up as a random word, so I think I'm an honorary Canadian at least.
All right, have you said sorry yet?
Yeah, surprisingly, like when I, when I came to Canada, I was told that, you know, I would hear like a boot and sorry, and I don't hear it very often. You know, I kind of felt like I was cheated a little bit when I came to Canada and didn't quite hear those things.
What the heck?
I know, I know.
All right, man. Well, how long have you been playing X-Wing?
I've been playing for about a year and a half now. I started it around March last year, right before Jump Masters came out. So right after Paul Heber won Worlds with Poe. And yeah, I was looking for like a sort of a community to join, actually. And I'd say that X-Wing has really met that expectation. You know, the community here is fantastic.
Awesome, awesome. So let's dive into the tournament itself. So for those who don't know yet, what was your list that you won Canadian Nationals with?
Yeah, so I was running Kanan Biggs. And my Kanan Biggs is a little bit different. So I was running Jeff Bizak, his version of Kanan Biggs. And so his version runs engine upgrade on Kanan, along with Ray and Recon spec and fire control systems. And then for Biggs, I was always running the stress bot R3A2, just like Jeff did. But for this tournament, I had replaced it with R4D6 and a 1-point bid.
So how many reps did you have with the list before the event?
I've had a lot of reps with the list. Actually, ironically, not like immediately before the event. So I basically ran into this list at Wixom Regionals last year. And I was playing Rack Merrick and just got destroyed by this list in 27 minutes. And then afterwards, I sort of picked it up. I played it for Canadian Regionals, Toronto Regionals. I played it in a bunch of small tournaments. I played it in the Vassal League. And then I sort of had put it aside for a while. And I just brought it back, only a couple weeks before Canadian Nationals, and sort of put in like 4 or 5 reps on it, and you know, was feeling pretty good about it.
How far did you go at Wixom Regionals? I was there too. I think me and Brandon were there.
Yeah, so actually this is the first time I've ever made a cut at a big event. I've always gone 4-2 at big events before.
Oh, holy crap. That's a big jump. So,
I know, I was not expecting this at all.
So what advice would you have for anyone who wants to play your list?
Yeah, I've actually got a ton of advice. So I don't know how long I can take on this, but
this is Bohan's show right now. You won the championship. You get to talk as much as you want.
All right. So I think a lot of people like look at Kanan Biggs and think it's kind of like a boring list. You know, it's like quad TLT. They have to shoot bays. You can kind of like prevent damage, and you know, it's kind of tanky. And that's partly true, and I think there are some builds that focus more on the TLT, you know, with like accuracy corrector, and I think there's some matchups that have a really, really hard time with Kanan Biggs. And so that's partly true, but on the other hand, I think actually Kanan Biggs is a very interesting list, and I really enjoy running it, and it actually has a lot of nuance to it. And so the first thing that I want to say is that you have the TLT, but Kanan Biggs really wants to get enemy ships in its arcs. So the firing arcs actually kind of matter for Kanan Biggs. And so if you think about it, like if you just have the TLT, if you don't get enemy ships in arc, you can only put out 4 damage a turn. And that's not a lot, right? So against like maybe like a very squishy ace or a very evasive ace like Soontir, you know, 4 TLT shots is nice. But, you know, it takes 3 rounds to kill Nim. It takes 3 rounds to kill Dash. It takes 3 rounds to kill Miranda. And on the other hand, if you get something in your primary arc, you know, you can deal up to 6 damage and you might even deal crits. And on top of that, you're more efficient with your token usage. You only have to modify 3 attacks instead of 4. So that's the first thing I want to mention. And then the second thing is like, okay, so now you're like, okay, getting ships in arc, that's not too hard. Like you just joust them. But the joust is actually kind of awkward for Kanan Biggs as well, because the turn after the joust, if you don't blow something up, it's not too difficult for your opponent to force either a bump into Kanan, or maybe they get into Kanan's side, you know, range one sort of donut hole area. And, you know, it's actually pretty easy for opponents to just, you know, force Kanan to not have great shots or any shots, and then just light up Biggs the second turn. So if you watch Jeff Bizak's game, so I have a link to Jeff Bizak's bat rep of Wixom Regionals, and he had a game that was streamed, and this is exactly what happened to him in the second round. He was up against Tell and Bosk, and in the second round, Tell ran into Kanan, and then Bosk was in the range one donut hole, and you know, Kanan had no shots, and Biggs kind of got lit up. So you really have to... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I want to ask, like, what's your strategy usually for keeping Biggs alive? Because I've heard this list and everything, and I can't really... It might not be my forte, but I can't get it to work the way. And the one I was running was the exact same one as you, because I don't like the Finn version of it. But, yeah, what do you do to keep him alive?
So I think using Biggs well is a hallmark of a great Kanan Biggs player. Like, I think most... You know, if you can play Kanan Biggs and just, like, have Biggs never take a shot, in some cases that works, but... Like, using him well is, I think, what really separates, like, the good ones from the best Kanan Biggs players. So, there's a few ways you can... As far as keeping him alive, there's a few ways that you can do it. You can just, like, you know... The ideal case is, like, on the approach, Kanan is at range 2 of your opponent, and Biggs is at range 3. And then you could spend focus tokens to nerf shots. R4-D6 helps with that. And then... You know, or alternatively, on the approach, you can have Kanan in range 3 and then Biggs out of range and then have, you know, force them to split damage, right? And then sometimes you can get it so that you fly Biggs behind a rock and then, you know, he gets the extra defense die. And so sometimes, you know, it's just a matter that, you know, Biggs is eventually going to die. And hopefully he gets off as many shots as possible, or takes as many shots as possible before that happens. So I would say that in about half my games that I win, Biggs actually stays alive. So I usually give up half points on Kanan or lose Biggs. And in half my games, you know, I guess I flow in such a way that, you know, I've separated Kanan and Biggs at some point. And my opponents chose to go after Kanan, which can often be the wrong choice.
Yeah, I remember I was watching the Canadian national streams, and I was watching last 2 games. I watched the last 2 games. And I did, like, when you split up Kanan and Biggs in the Fairship matchup, I was like, what is going on? Now, it worked. It worked.
Okay, great. Okay. So let's take a step back. That was not... So I think there might have been a good idea there. The execution was just awful. Like it was.
Okay.
It was,
yeah, all right. That's fine. That's fair.
Yeah. So okay. So the idea for that game was, again, I wanted Biggs to contribute his firepower, right? Because again, like before, I was saying, okay, so if you only get TLT shots, you can do a maximum of 4 damage. Mm-hmm. If you get the Kanan's primary shot and the TLT shots, you can do a, you know, maximum of 6 damage. And if you get Biggs on top of that, you can actually do a maximum of 9 damage. Of course, you know, that's unrealistic, but you know, you could potentially do 9 damage around. Yeah,
perfect.
And world. So having that extra Biggs shot is actually very important for being successful with this list. And so my thought there was I had Biggs kind of in a position behind Kanan. And I could have just flown around the board and then just had Biggs like soak up all the shots. But if I did that, there was probably a good chance that Biggs would maybe get one shot off or not get any shots off at all. And then he would die, right? So I was like, okay, instead of Biggs dying, being next to Kanan and never getting any shots off, why not I split Biggs off, you know, around the bottom of the board and force him to make a hard choice, either to go after Biggs or to go after Kanan. And if he goes after Biggs, well, Biggs is going to die anyway, but this time he's going to die, you know, with his guns facing forward. And so I should have actually, on the turn, I should have just 3-hearted down and then, like, committed to that strategy. And then even after K-turning, I probably should have, you know, as I said in the interview afterwards, I probably should have, you know, banked or turned down instead of turning back up. So there were a lot of issues with what I was doing that game. But, so somehow I still won in the end.
Yeah. Well, and this is not on the notes, but one thing that you did in that was to your advantage is that you played really, really fast.
Yeah.
Right? But that's like with Fairship Rebel, you have to.
Yeah.
You have to save as many seconds as possible, and you know, you were being polite and saying, "Hey, I'll help you even move your ships," right? But the reality behind that is I want to help you move your ships because I'm a nice guy, but also it helps me.
Yeah. So I want to give a shout out to Ryan, my opponent, who is playing the Fairship Rebels.
Yeah.
So we were getting low on time, and I actually, you know, asked him straight up. I was like, "Look, we're getting a little low on time. Can we play faster?" And he was fantastic sport. You know, he, you know, definitely took less time on his dials. He let me help him with his ships, and you know, he could have said no. And he was within his rights to play at a normal speed, you know, think about his decisions a little bit more. But I think he was a fantastic sport, and I think he really sets an example for all of us. You know, I think I would have still run away, like, you know, I probably would have run away, but like the fact that he was willing to, like, you know, play a little bit faster and, you know, not use the time, but, you know, try to play it out and be a, you know, really good sport. You know, I really want to commend that.
Yeah, I just want to say something about him as well, because I was watching, I was on that end of the table where Nate was playing his games, and Ryan or Brian?
Ryan.
Ryan, yeah, he was playing his sets of matches over there on that end as well. And the top 16 and the top 8 match that I saw him, he was just having fun. He wasn't, especially that Fairship Rebel versus Fairship Rebel mirror list. I mean, mirror match on the top 8. It's two, in my opinion, boring lists, but the way that they played it and the way that they were behaving with each other and interacting, both players, I just thought that was like the perfect example of what
sportsmanship
is about. Yeah, they were just really, really cool, and they were laughing every time they rolled the dice. Every time they bumped and crashed, they were laughing, and they were just having a good time. So I can kind of attest to what he's saying about Ryan. Really great guy.
Yeah, I've played Ryan twice before in tournaments, and he's always been, you know, a fantastic opponent to play against. So yeah, fantastic guy all around.
All right, so I want to take another look here at your list. Now, when I saw your list, my eyebrows went up a little bit because when Nate and I were practicing earlier in the season, he had also made the decision to put engine upgrade on the Ghosts, which I think is a big difference between a lot of the Kanan Biggs that we, at least locally, we see here. Yeah, like And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, hey, I kind of know how this plays. And when you and Nate got matched up, I was like, oh, hey, he has a chance. Because he's seen it a little bit. Yeah. Why did you come to that conclusion?
Yeah, great question. So I've actually always run this with Engine Upgrade. And I've, you know, started because I basically copied the list from Jeff Bizak at Wixom Regionals. And he was running Engine Upgrade. And the reason I like Engine Upgrade is because I was saying earlier that the list has a bunch of awkward second turns of engagement where, you know, there's not a lot of good maneuvers, especially if there's rocks in bad positions to avoid, you know, getting bumped or Kanan having no shots. And so Engine Upgrade really expands your options for what you can do that second round. My other thought process was, okay, like, you know, Fairship Rebels is pretty big. I can use Engine Upgrade to maybe arc dodge a bit. You know, I think Engine Upgrade might have hurt me more than it helped me that game. But, you know, that was sort of the idea there.
And then what would you say would be a hard counter to your list?
Yeah, so a hard counter would be any list with Boba Fett. It doesn't matter if they take the turret or if they take the ghost title. I mean, you know, once that happens, it's pretty much game over. Otherwise, it has the hardest matchups are probably ones that have really good damage output. Again, you know, it's this list has pretty good damage output, but, you know, again, it's not fantastic damage output. And, you know, they're a list that can put out a lot of damage, and that's always very scary.
Yeah, so, I mean, on that same vein, when I was looking at the matchups, I saw that you got to play against Travis Johnson.
Yeah.
And when I looked at that score, I scratched my head. So can you give me some details on that game and how did you win that game?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was, you know, going into it, I was a little intimidated as well. Like, you know, triple contracted scouts, it's a tough matchup. But I was like, all right, you know what? Like, I've been sort of a not, you know, it was a triple scouts list. It wasn't the most optimal one. And there were, you know, they had some mistakes in the setup. So I was like, okay, like, you know, it's potentially doable. Let's just see how it goes. And so what I ended up doing was I set up two rocks on the left edge of the board, one at 2 and 2 and one, you know, range one down from that. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was, okay, they like to deploy on their right side, you know, turn left. This kind of disrupts some of their plans. And then Travis deployed in the center. And then I was like, and then I deployed on the left side. And my game plan was, okay, so there's a bunch of ships in the game, including like Miranda, which we'll talk about later, and Contracted Scouts, where they do most of their damage when they're ahead of you, like when they're in front of you, right? So if like a Contracted Scout gets in front of Kanan, it's game over, he's going to block me forever, like I'm never going to get another action, life is bad. Mm-hmm. So my goal was to just get past the Contracted Scouts. And so I kind of did my standard opening going straight. He sort of went fast. And then the second turn, we sort of, you know, we shot. So he had two ships that shot Biggs and then one ship that could shoot Kanan. And then, you know, I shot back and my dice was pretty hot that entire game. I should say that Travis's dice were failing him just on variance. Like he was rolling focus evade consistently on his defense, but I was rolling two hits pretty consistently on TLTs, and so he was like taking almost every single TLT shot. And so I basically did like 4 damage to one jump master the first round in exchange for some minor damage on my ships. And then the next round was sort of the crucial round where he sort of hard turned in two of his ships towards that that rock formation. And so, and then like the injured Jumpmaster, which was the furthest up, sort of ran away. And so I kind of like turned Biggs in a little bit. I actually split them apart at that point. And Kanan, I just like, you know, I went fast into the rock formation. And so I did a 3 straight. I looked at it. It wasn't enough. And then I did the boost. And so the boost cost me the focus. I took 2 extra damage. I took 10 damage that round from, you know, the plasma torpedo effect and from a direct hit. Mm-hmm. But the effect of the boost was now I was, you know, he was not able to get past me, right? So there was the rock at 2 and 2 that was protecting me from like a hard turn and then barrel roll. And, you know, I was far enough in that, you know, he couldn't like just straight or bang past me. And so once Kanan was sort of safe there, well, now he was actually in an awkward position. And so next round, he couldn't quite get his other injured jump master away, and I would manage to kill it. And then he never really got another torpedo off. And Biggs managed to survive there at the end at one health, which was kind of a, kind of a surprise, but it really didn't matter. I had Kanan on six health against a jump master that was limping, and he could block me as long as he wants. That's fine. But eventually I was going to win on time, or if not, I was going to kill it. So that's how it basically ended. So against jump masters, again, the plan was to try to get in front of it, try to get into rock formation where they couldn't really block me forever, and hope my red dice were better than his green dice.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a fast and bloody game.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those games where once one jump master goes down, then it's like, okay, I'm in good shape.
Exactly.
That's what happened.
Because I know Marcel and I have played a lot of triple jumps against Kanan Biggs. And have smashed a lot of Kanan Biggs with it. So when we just saw that on paper, it was just a little bit of a question mark. I wonder what happened. And it sounds like you played it perfectly. You know, you used the rocks to your advantage. You had, you got to put yourself in an opportunity for the dice to be good. They
exactly.
worked out, and it came out. So that's awesome. So what would you say would be your toughest matchup?
Toughest matchup, like as it played out, or toughest matchup like on paper?
We can go both. How it played out first.
Okay, so how? On paper, it was probably the triple jumps list. That was probably the toughest matchup. As it played out, except for the final game, all three of my playoff games were incredibly close. And I actually wrote a bat rep on my blog, the Space Owls X-Wing blog. So you can take a look at it there. But basically, So the first game was against Miranda, Nora, and Rex, and something went horribly wrong somewhere along the line where I was behind on damage at some point, and then Nora lived an extra turn, and it ended up with two health Kanan against two health Miranda, which is not a good place to be because mm-hmm. she shoots first.
Yep, and you have zero agility.
And I have zero agility. So I took an evade and I launched the shuttle, and then Miranda, sort of went slow. And so she was at range two of Zeb and she regened. And it so turned out that actually by my calculations, Miranda has a surprisingly low chance of dealing two damage to Kanan with an evade. It's actually 37% if she regens, or if I nerf her shot. It's 60% if those are both three attack TLTs. But anyway, she manages to do the two damage to Kanan. And I'm like, all right, Zeb, it's your glory moment. She has three health. I have to roll perfect. And he has to not roll an evade. And I roll perfect. And he rolled a focus. And he had to spend a focus on offense to get past my evade. And so Zeb, that was actually the second time Zeb won me the game in that tournament. He also killed Nim in similar fashion. Okay, so that was that. And then the second round, I played against the best Dash Miranda player I've ever seen. He was running Lone Wolf Dash. And like I said in my blog, so if both players are sort of, lower tier, then I think the matchup is heavily tilted in Kanan Biggs' favor. But if both players are really, really good, especially if the Dash Miranda player is really good, then I think it's actually pretty even. If maybe even potentially in favor of Dash Miranda, possibly, if depending on how the rock placement went. And so what ended up happening was, again, I got a little bit behind on damage, although partly that was because of Bryson, who was flying it. Bryson's great play. And I managed to kill Dash eventually, and then I had Kanan on 3 health and Biggs on 2 health. And then I messed up my maneuver so that Biggs kind of dangled behind, and Miranda was only shooting Biggs and not getting shot by Kanan. And then Biggs went down, and I was like, oh, this is bad. Because Miranda was still pretty healthy at that time. And then he went over a debris, which meant that he couldn't kind of get away from me. And then so I shot Miranda one round and did a lot of damage, and she shot me back, and she whiffed a TLT shot that first round. And then the second round, it was Kanan on 2 health against Miranda on, you know, something low. And I was able to get focus evade, and she was at range 2 in my rear arc. And so she shot me, and she had taken the target lock. And so the first roll was 3 hits, and so that was a damage. And the second roll, she didn't regen, so I nerfed the attack. So he was rolling 2 dice, and he rolls 2 focuses. And so he spends the target lock. He didn't have a focus. He spends the target lock and rolls a blank and a crit. And so I evade that, and then I kill him with my primary. So again, comes down to the last roll.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was the semifinals game against Fisher Rebels, which just went, I mean, so I said afterwards, I actually had never played against Fairship Rebels before. So I was just making everything up on the fly. I didn't know how many shots I could take. You know, I was like playing scared. And yeah, like you can watch it on your own. Like it's a really difficult match for me to kind of like really watch, because I think I just made a ton of mistakes and didn't play very well. But yeah, that also came down to the last die roll, where Kanan survived on 1 health. And I had to roll exactly basically what I did to kill Jess. So there was that.
Yeah, that was awesome, dude. So, I mean, I know you've talked about a lot of great moments. Any other really memorable moments from the tournament?
Winning was pretty awesome. The interview was pretty awesome. And like I said, you know, in the interview after the, you know, in the stream, I got some ramen the night after the Swiss rounds with my good friend Mark, and that was also pretty nice.
Again, congratulations, and we're gonna flip it real quick. Nate, you got all the way to the final table.
Yeah, I lost to this champion over here. He did a great job.
Yeah,
hell yeah, man, that was a great game. I basically served that on you really badly.
Yeah, okay. I think we were talking afterwards, and that burnout slam would have really made a big difference.
And you said it perfectly, like, oh yeah, that would have been a game. I don't know what I was thinking. I get in my own head, and I just make stupid decisions. I was like, maybe this will be a great spot. No, it's really the worst spot possible. Oops, oh well. I think for the fact that I went 4-2 the day one and actually ended up like tabling like 3 or 4 guys, and actually was the highest one in highest 4-2 that was actually make it. And then I went against Duncan Howard, and that was really funny because round one and like the cuts of top 16, I went against Duncan Howard, and me and Duncan have never played before, but I know he's really good. He's supposed to be really, really good, and he is really, really good. And me, Marcel, and my girlfriend Allie, we were all just like, I'm just going to lose round one, and then we could all go on a tour of Toronto and then just go home early. And that didn't happen. Somehow, that didn't happen. So, Duncan, by the book, should have won. There was one point where Duncan had Asajj and Dengar, and I had my Miranda Ray, and there was this one moment where what happened was Ray didn't have either of them in arc. His Dengar went over debris because Asajj dropped the cargo chute. Dengar went over the debris, tried to shoot at Ray, couldn't. Oh no, he took a shot at her, missed. Asajj had a rain one shot with like glitter stem, missed. And everything.
Oh, wow.
And it was just like, that should not have happened at all. That should never have happened. Miranda regened, and then I was just like, oh, well, one more round, and then I was able to get Asajj, and then I was just Miranda versus Dengar, and all Miranda had to do was do 1 point of damage just to win on points, and you know, I was setting things fast and everything, but still, it was just, we ran out of time. But by the books and by the numbers, you know, Duncan should have like tore me up right there, and it totally would have somehow dice, you know, were in my favor there. Oh, and he got a blinded pilot in the worst possible moment too, in that same moment. So, other than that, it was like, I don't know, all the like regular rounds are just whatever. I lost twice.
Yeah, man. Well, I just want to say for you, Nate, I want to say, you know, great season, dude. Like, you know, you won a couple store champs. You got second in Canada, top
8.
top 8 at Gen Con. So,
wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, so really good season. And it's
thank you.
I'm glad to call you my squad mate in the Gold Squadron. And and you know what? Since Bohan's here, Bohan, what are your thoughts on the Dice app?
Dice app forever.
Have any issues with it? I mean, the only thing I've ever heard about it was that, you know, there was that one article that somebody did where they said, oh, the Dice app rolls great results. And so the only thing I did was, okay, like, if you want to use the Dice app, I also want to use the Dice app. But besides that, yeah, I didn't really care about it. Like, it was fine.
It's not a perfect device, trust me. It has gone stone cold, cold or something for many, many rounds. And you're just like, wow, nothing is happening for, like, 20 rounds in, like, two games. It'll just give you nothing.
I mean, I noticed that, too. Like, I was rolling okay on, like, primary shots. But, like, you know, on average, I think... You know, I whiffed some TLT shots. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't notice it was crazy, you know, a balance for rolling a bunch of hits or evades. So, I didn't really, you know, I think a lot of people were upset. I didn't really care about that.
Don't care.
Yeah, and that's fine. I just get a kick out of it because they're like, I see all, I mean, come on, right? We are all on the internet. We see Facebook. We see Reddit. You see the people like, Dicep.
Wait. I haven't been on the internet for a while. Are people mean on the internet?
But it's just funny. It's funny, like, how you see it transform, like, third hand and fourth hand. I'm like, you don't even know where this started, and I know the guy. I play with him every week, right? It's just kind of funny there. It's fine. We don't care about the Dice app. If we want to be like just totally in a vacuum, if we look at the facts, your reasoning makes zero sense. But if it makes you feel better, then it doesn't matter. You just do it. So that it's like it's that two sides. It's like, hey, he feels like he doesn't want to influence the dice, so he just wants to press a button and see what happens.
Exactly.
That's fine, because as it says, you know, it's legal FFG product. And it's
being Have we talked so. About why I use the Dice app on the show yet? Or
I think you mentioned it, right? You don't. I mean, I think we mentioned it. You just don't want to feel like you're rolling the dice wrong for lack of a better.
Yeah, because if I roll dice, I feel like it's physically my fault if I get like bad results. It's like, oh, I did that. Whereas a computer, I'm like, boop, whatever, I can accept it.
Yeah.
So hate is gonna hate.
Yeah. I kind of like that a little bit more, because sometimes I worry that, oh, my opponent's rolling their dice in a certain way and always getting results, and then I get frustrated about that.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever had the guy, like, and I'm sure there's many guys that do this, to kind of do the really slow, weird roll off their hand, and everything ends up always just being perfect somehow, and you're like, can you please not roll like that again?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So in some ways, actually, you know, yeah, I use the Dice app. I trust the random number generator more than I trust, like, you know, these potentially, you know, imperfect dice that FFG put out.
Well, someone's talking about, like, oh, you know, you can hack into those things. I'm like, yeah, that's great. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
But you can pay someone to do it. I'm like, yeah, I can't afford that. So.
Yeah. So last thing about Canadian Nationals here, I want to do just a couple of quick stat hits for the tournament. The most common pilot among the lists was Nim. Had 22 Nims in the tournament.
Wow.
The most common Imperial pilot was Quick Draw. There actually were 13 of them. 13 Quick Draws. And then we'll kind of rounds out with Miranda. There were 13 Mirandas and 11 Dengars. One just kind of thing I found interesting was that there were only 3 Fenraus in the entire tournament. And, you know, just right before the most recent wave came out, Fenrao was everywhere. He was a huge part of the meta. And to see him in a major tournament only be 3, and that is that the gentleman, like, I looked at his, I don't remember his name, but I looked at his matchups.
Billy Chandler. And
there you go. So he got into the top 8, and I'm sure he played great, but he must have sacrificed something to the matchup gods, because he only played against Bombs twice and actually won one of the games.
Yeah.
I only played one Nim, and that Nim didn't even have bombs. Like, Marcel Bohan, like, how many Nims did you guys go against?
I played one Nim. That was... It ended up being a lot closer than it should have been, probably. Or, sorry, it ended up being a lot closer. I think, you know, he made a good play, and I might have, like, made a bad play at some point. But that also came down to Zeb heroically killing Nim on the last turn after Kanan died.
Wow. What about you, Marcel?
So, if everybody's noticed, I've been very quiet this whole Nationals, Canadian Nationals thing.
Why is that?
Well, because I did horrible.
Because you're so modest. That's why.
Yeah, because I mean,
so modest.
Yeah, so I came to the tournament with only the ships that I brought, which is the triple jumps, which is the only thing that I've played in the last couple of weeks because I haven't had a chance to play. And then at I think the registration was over at 10:30, and at 10:28, I asked the event organizers if I can pull my list away, and I, on the spot, invented a new list, which was a weird variant of Dengar Tal Trevorrow. And my first match was actually against somebody that you played, Bohan, which was Bryson, who ended up going to the long
team. Oh, yeah.
And I actually had him beat. I just made a mental mistake, and I could have barrel rolled away from an Ion Bomb, and I was like, Ion Bomb is only one damage. I can still win. But then after I decided, like, oh, I can barrel roll and still win. I mean, I can just take the one damage and still win. Then I realized, wait, there's a big old asteroid ahead of me, and that asteroid did the damage.
Oh, no.
Killed me. I was like, okay, maybe that. So that was a great part. But yeah, I ended up 3-3. I also lost last year's national champion, Alan Fang, who, you know, awesome guy. He tabled me. Hope he gets his crates templates. But yeah, it was fun. But I played. I just had a good time. It was fun. Kind of regret changing my list maybe, you know, 120 seconds before the tournament started. But you know, that's a uh-huh. lesson to be learned. Don't change your list 120 seconds before.
Like, I'll be honest, Marcel, you sent me that text, and all I text back was, okay.
I didn't feel like playing. I didn't feel like, because there was like six triple jumps already, and I figured, well, somebody's gonna do well with it.
Okay, so here, you know what? I'm gonna have a small argument with you. You are literally considered the best triple jump player. At least we'll say, I'm gonna say in the world, but we'll be modest and say mm-hmm. in North America. And you went, nah.
to be fair, right. Dion, I did take a crack swarm in the middle of don't use crack swarm to Adapticon, and I did take two TSFs to the top four at 130 person Ohio regional when people said don't fly SFs. So I've been known to do stupid stuff before, and sometimes it works. Sometimes it works out. This time I didn't. But anyway, I'm going to back up Bohan's thing that Alan's great, but that Bryson is, I mean, Bryson had no, what's the word? He should not have won that match, but he is just such a phenomenal player. So big ups to him.
Yeah, like in our game as well, like he made a couple of small mistakes at the beginning, but he was like one of the best Dash Miranda players I've ever seen, and definitely made that matchup look even.
And he's up in Northwest Canada in the middle of nowhere, so I'm pretty sure that'll be good.
AKA yeah, Edmonton. Edmonton.
If he gets to, you know, if he was in a place where he got to play more regularly, I'm afraid to see how good he would be.
So what I'm noticing also with this is that Vader is kind of come back onto the scene a little bit more, which I haven't seen Vader like this prominent in a while for a little bit.
Well, the only reason Vader is there in the Imperials, and same thing with Quick Draw, is that you can put VI on them, get them to 11, and have a chance.
Yep.
Against yep. Nim.
I see. That's why I saw a lot of VI Vaders. When I saw a VI Vader, I'm like, okay, that's fine. So you move after me, I'm still gonna hit you. So.
Yeah, they're not worried about you, Nate. They were worried about
Nim. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody. So, do you remember with the Gen Con interview where Chris said like your list was the most wholesome?
Yes,
do you remember
I
that?
Do.
So, like, the reason like people are not worried about you is that your list, you know, pretty is more what we'll call it, quote unquote, fair, because you have a cheaper Miranda, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have like a 50-something point Miranda. You have a cheaper Miranda. You have Ray, which is a turret that can take half points pretty easily and is stuck at PS8 and needs its firing arc. So, like, there are elements, like, those are elements that you don't see in a lot of lists right now. So, like, you just, I think, one advantage you have there is that you surprise them. It's like, hey, you brought Vader. I'm going to smash you. So, it worked out. It worked out for sure. A couple other things I just want to touch on here. Upgrade-wise, I just kind of found this really interesting. In the tournament, there were 53 copies of TLT used and 31 bomblet generators and only 14 copies of auto thrusters. So I say only, but I find that interesting. You know, with so much TLT, you would expect more auto thrusters just kind of as a reaction. But really what's keeping it down is bomblet. So there's that suppression there. So just kind of found that interesting, some numbers to look at.
So I do want to quickly say, though, it's interesting to also look at the ship statistics after the cut. So there were 22 NIMs in the tournament, but only one of them made the cut. And that one was that really cool, janky, like, triple Skurg list with...
And I lost to him.
Yeah.
I lost to Sebastian. He's a French-Canadian, and... he had such a janky three Skurg list. It had Nim, the three and the one like Skurg, and he had auto blaster turrets on two of them with accuracy corrector, and then on the third one he had TLT. He had no bombs.
No. Nim had bombs. Nim had the bomblet.
Oh yeah, he did have the bomb. You're right.
But the rest
of
them had bombs.
That like once or twice. Yeah, but it was just kind of like, when I first went against it, I was like, what the hell is this crap? I'm going to blow this apart. And then he 100-0'd me. I was like, oh my god.
So then I
went against him during the Final Four, and I smashed him. I got my revenge on him. So
I want to say that there's a key component of that triple Skurg list. So the PS3 Karthak Pirate had... draw their fire and gonk.
That's right, he did.
Yeah,
it was so like weird and obscure, but it worked very, very well for him. And he was a wonderful, fun guy to play with. So shout out to Sebastian. He was a great guy.
So besides Nim, only one of 22. Quick Draw Invader, only one of them. You know, one list with that made the top 16 out of 13 and 11. Miranda, there were four in the top 16, and I actually played three of them. So that's a 31% conversion rate.
Yeah.
Out of the 13. Dengar had a 3 in the top 16, so that was a 27% conversion rate. Dash, there was 1 in the top 16. And also, there were 9 bigs lists in total, I think, that were filled in, and 5 of those actually made the top 16, so that was like a 56% conversion rate.
So, are you saying bigs is good?
Yeah, bigs is pretty good. I might have also taken
I've heard
bigs.
That the devs hate him.
Yeah.
I find that answer vague and unconvincing.
All right, guys. So we're taking another visit to our playbook here. And today I want to focus on specifically one pilot, and that is Miranda. You see her all over the place. She is one of the most popular Rebel pilots for a myriad of reasons, and I want to start by talking about some of her strengths, right? So, I think the most obvious one, if you look at her ability, is regeneration. She can spend the shield in order to attack harder or reduce her attack value to get shields back, and we know that more life equals... good, right? She's able to equip a twin laser turret, which is a really efficient weapon. She can carry lots of different types of ordnance, whether it be bombs, missiles, or torpedoes. And on top of that, she is a point fortress. Like, she can just, I mean, pack on so much points. I mean, I haven't tried to fill out the most points you can do, but I mean, if you're really just trying to hoard points on one ship, you could probably get to the upper 50s. Maybe could you touch 60? Maybe
you
could
touch 70.
You can get to 70. Oh, jeez. That's a big girl.
A lot. I think that's what like people originally did with her too. Like when Kimmy's first came out, they would throw just too much stuff on her. And I think that's like, you know, it's like, hey, let's load up this thing with everything we've got. But then like old TIE bombers, when you try to put all these missiles, but you'd only get like maybe one off if you're lucky before they die.
Yeah,
that's
like a waste of points. So here, Nate, and this is not related, but related at the same time.
Okay.
In our current meta, that's not a bad thing. Like, so I'm going to relate this to your interview when they asked you about Kylo and Thweek. Specifically, I want to talk about Kylo. I know that you said, oh, it's going to be so expensive. But that in this game right now is a good thing. If you have a really, you can get her up to 73, by the way. Wow. I just said it right now.
73 point Miranda.
That's right. So like having a small base ship that mind you, let's preface this. This is tournament play. You are just trying to take advantage of the way tournaments are played. You know, a fat Miranda sitting at 50 something points usually, and you just win the game because that ship can stay alive at the end game and be more points than what your opponent has. That's a good thing. Kylo is going to be in that same range. At least people are going to try to play it that way. We're going to see him in the 45-point range, somewhere around there, a lot. And the goal will be keep Kylo alive until you have less points than he does, and then arc dodge you forever. Like, that's going to be the strategy there.
That's not any different than the old Sunter Fel or, like, Corrin Horn things, though.
Yeah, but you're talking about Sunterfell with 30 something.
Right.
Corrin Horn, maybe.
It's Sunterfell was 30 something. Corrin Horn's about 42,
43.
So the difference here, though, is that you have potentially a higher PS. You're starting at PS9, and then you compare him to Sunterfell, he's more expensive. So he is what Sunterfell wants to be now. Like, if you liked Sunter, here's your possibly the opportunity you have to play him. And anyway, that's not totally related. We did a little tangent there. Let's get back to Miranda.
So anyway, so Miranda, I think one of the things that you're missing in his strengths is in her strengths is the advanced slam. It's the combat. It's, you know, regeneration is not a problem. You have Gonk, you have R2-D2, you have all these other regeneration things. It's not a problem. TLT is not a problem. Advanced slam, or even slam itself, is not a problem. Well, when you combine all of them, now you have a ship that can regenerate and still put out damage with a 2-dice attack followed by a 3-dice attack. And then on top of that, you can slam away from arcs, slam away from range, even from big, you know, you're talking about big base ships. You can slam away from a big, you know, a 3 followed by another, you know, one range, which is the range of your base of the ship, plus another 3. I mean, you're going to have a hard time keeping up with Miranda. And then once you do get close to catching up to her, all she has to do is do 2 hard, followed by another 2 hard, and then bump into you, not take shots that time, and now doing another 3, followed by another 3 slam. And the big ship has to turn around and come following you again. So in other words, the slam, I think, is what makes Miranda the point fortress that she is, because if you put this regeneration and TLT on someone like Nim, it's not going to survive because it doesn't have the slam. So I think the slam is what brings it all together for Miranda. And as far as how do you beat Miranda?
Oh, we're not there yet. Don't spill the cookies. We're not there
yet. I'll keep it till later.
Bohan, you have any thoughts on Miranda's strengths?
Yeah, I basically agree. I mean, I think, you know, the combination, like you said, of Van Slam and everything really makes her hard to deal with. And part of it's like, you know, normally when you slam, you can't deal damage. You can't regen. That's okay. But when you have bombs, you know, when you drop it, you can drop bomblets forever. Or you can slam over somebody and drop cluster mines on them. You know, that's something else that you have to deal with when you chase her.
So now I want to start sliding into the weaknesses. Now, with the Wave 12 preview, we saw and pretty much confirmed that Advanced Slam is going to be changing. So the, you know, Advanced Slam bombing, whenever that comes out, won't be a thing. Whenever that is. How much does that hurt Miranda?
Not for me. I don't use the advanced land bombing, but a lot of people do. And I felt this is silly. I thought that was the whole point of the action bombs. It wasn't something that was inherently broken or inherently overpowered.
Oh, okay, Nate, I'm going to argue with you again. I'm going to argue with you again.
No, that's fine.
Because Miranda and advanced land bombing, like even before Nim, was the reason why you didn't see ships like Soonterfell and low hit point Imperial ships. It was because you had nowhere you could hide from a good player. That is,
yeah,
right. Like,
well, yeah, if you're good, you can nowhere. Move, drop a bomb on them, and everything, because you're going to move before them. So that's the one open spot you can get on them if you can move and drop it on them.
Yeah,
so.
Especially if you were lower pilot skill than something like. Then soon, you're like, oh, where are you? Okay, I do this move, drop clusters on you, you're dead.
Yeah, I get that.
So the thing is, you can still do it with experimental interface. It makes the next round a little bit trickier. But if you're up against something like soon tier, you know, you only need one round to do it.
Yeah. Oh, and I don't think the advanced slam nerf is going to bring soon tier back. No, I think he's gone forever. But, no. But with doing it with the experimental interface starts to slide us into some of her weaknesses, and she is poor versus control. And one form of control is stress. Now, this is a self-stressing mechanic, but her dial is very limiting. When you are stressed, you only have, what is it? It's the one forward, the one banks, and the two forward. Am I right about that?
That's
yeah.
it.
So, I mean, going for something like that could compromise your Miranda. You know, you might get one good shot off, but if it's a high hit point ship who didn't die from that bomb, was it worth it?
I'm going to go a different route. Experimental interface is one more point. That means one more fortress for Miranda, and no matter what you're running, even the most expensive Miranda will only have. Extra munitions and one action bomb, one reveal bomb. So you're only dropping an action bomb twice in an entire match at most. And you're using it at the most optimal time. So I don't think experimental interface is going to be that big of a deal. You're basically going to use it to kill Aces. You're going to use it to kill Fen Rao. You're going to use it to kill Vader. But you're not going to use it to... You're not going to experimental interface... I guess a big base turret. I think that the advanced slam is going to get rid of triple K wings, which aren't around anymore anyway. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. And then on top of that, I know we're jumping way ahead, but on top of that, we're going to get that 5 forward bomb toss, which anyway, I'll just jump off.
Yeah, trajectory simulator.
Bombs are back.
Yeah. Yep.
And a couple other of her weaknesses, like I said, she's bad against control. Ion control, I think, is in general just horrible for a small base ship because they only need one ion token to make it happen. And she can slam off of the one ion, but it doesn't take you very far. she's bad against blocking, and. You know, and then we combine that with Intel Agent. We see Intel Agent everywhere right now. And if you can get a good blocking ship that's not going to that can survive some bombs versus a Miranda with and you're using Intel Agent, you could whittle her down pretty quickly to get plenty of arcs on her.
Even TLCs tend to rip her apart.
Yep, and that's kind of my next bullet point here is. The one agility, it can be a liability when you have multiple ships shooting her. Kanan Biggs versus a Miranda that's in range just eats that girl up. Like you're dead. You're dead. Yep. I'm sorry. That's four damage each round you're in range.
Or potentially so, six.
Yeah. Oh God.
When it gets the lower Kanan build, like I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna. Saying this because I want to get two hits off, and then I was like, "Wait, I'm trading two hits for four hits." Oh, why did I do that? Yeah. Oh, math.
Yep. So that's there. So that's why, you know, when I see a Miranda across the table, and your opponent knows this, like, I need as much of my list as possible available to kill Miranda, because you don't want to leave Miranda for the end game, and your opponent knows that you don't want to leave Miranda for the end game. So they do have the I'm going to use this word. They have the agency. Okay, they have it, and they're looking at you and saying, "How are you going to figure this out? What are you going to do with this Miranda?" So, you know, and that kind of flips back to her strengths. Yeah. Any other thoughts, boys? Go for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, on that point, at one point I was thinking about flying triple defenders. I never did. I ended up flying Kanan Biggs, but you know, that was in the meta where it was like dash Miranda, triple K wings, and like, you know, triple defenders, Paratani, and so on. And against Miranda, I was really, you know, it was exactly that. I had to kill Miranda first, or else, you know, she was going to kill my defenders in the end game. And so I sort of game planned around killing her first. And the thing is, she has 9 health. She might regen 1, so plan on 10 health and, you know, 1 agility. And so usually most lists are going to take 2 turns to kill her. So you might be able to one round her if you get her in range 1 of all your ships and you have good modded attacks, but usually you should plan on 2 rounds to kill her. So you should have some game plan for how you're going to do it. So either maybe like, you know, maybe you just rush in range 1 and then, you know, manage to block all of her potential advanced slam options and then try to one round her. Or maybe you get her in range 2 or 3 the first round, and then the next round you block her escape routes, and then you kill her at range 1. But, you know, you should sort of plan around setting up the obstacles and sort of planning your approach so that you can get all your arcs on Miranda for 2 turns and take a bomb if you have to, but get her off the board. The other thing, there's some more specific sort of ways that you can deal with Miranda. So, for example, Miranda, one of her weaknesses is that she doesn't have great damage output, especially against low defense ships. You can think that she's like a 50-point ship, and for that, you might want her to put out, you know, some really good, consistent, reliable damage. But, you know, against a low defense ship, I mean, Twin Laser Turret is only 2 damage, and it can't deal crits. And so I've always, you know, liked the end game of, like, you know, for example, Kanan with his 4 TLT shots and his 4 dice primary against a low Miranda. The other thing that you can do, which, you know, I really like to do with Kanan Biggs, is that if you can get ahead of Miranda, she's a lot less threatening than if you're trying to chase her from behind. Because if you chase her from behind, you're going to eat the bombs. She's going to drop bomblets on you, or she's going to drop ion bombs or whatever. And she can, like, you know, 2 hard and then 2 hard slam and then just be out of your arc. But if you can get in front of her, then she has to rely on her TLT to hit you. She can't bomblet you. You know, you can kind of sort of control her damage output that way. And then there's the last option where if everything goes wrong and you can't sort of pin her down, it might be a good idea to just disengage if you have the time or the points. And then, you know, rather than try to chase her through her bombs, you know, try to disengage and then approach her again from the front.
All right, guys, so for our next segment, I have a few messages for us and questions on our Gold Squadron voicemail, and the plan is to listen to a couple and just do our best to answer their question live on air. They have been pre-screened, so nothing crazy.
Oh, no, Zach Matthews.
should be said. All right, so...
Where do baby Dion's come from?
Here's the first one.
In light of the average turn game length being around 11 turns, does Ordnance Silos giving somebody a 4 total bombs make it poor man's bomblet generator? Can you essentially get the effectiveness of 2 bomblet generators in one list? Thinking that 4 good placed bombs is going to be pretty good. Think about that.
All right, mysterious man. We don't know your name. But so... Ordnance Silos is something that was previewed for the Rebel Bomber.
BSFF.
Right. I keep calling it in my head the RBF Bomber. For those of you who don't know, that's the Resting Bitch Face Bomber. okay. Like, I don't know. That's just what popped into my head. I believe it's 1 point. And it gives you, you know, 3 Ordnance tokens. And you basically have 3... you know, you have a total of 4 bombs when you use it, but it takes up a bomb slot. So he's asking here, does he give you kind of a poor man's bomba generator? So with 11 turns, you know, it. So when I did my research here, the average became 11 turns. I think that if your games are constantly hitting on average, 4 bombs is going to be enough if that ship can stay alive. We don't know what other tricks the we're just going to call it the RBF. The RBF has in mind. We don't know what other things it has up its sleeve, but you know, it looks like a stripped out Jumpmaster. You just kind of look at the very base chassis. It's like a Jumpmaster that can't barrel roll. It's gonna have a 2 primary turret, and then I kind of compare that to the Wild Space Fringer. You don't really see the you know, the low PS ones. So the only place
the main guy's name again?
Crimson Leader.
Crimson, okay,
yeah, and then Crimson Leader looks like it has a cool effect with the with its ability, but it's gonna start getting kind of pricey, and not like good pricey, because big base ships that are pricey give up half points. Maybe I think something like ion bombs could be really cool. I just don't know if this ship by itself is gonna be a bit. Like, if it's going to make a big impact. Before Bomblet Generator, one thing you would always try to do was to try to get, like, bait your opponent into dropping a bomb and essentially wasting it.
Right.
So it does give your opponent an out. I think it's more fair.
Yeah.
Than Bomblet Generator.
Yeah, definitely. And
anybody else want to jump on that one?
Yeah, you might think that, you know, for 4 bomblets or 4 bombs of whatever type, it can be quite a bit. But, you know, 11 turns, let's say 8 of those are actually after the engagement. You know, there's a big difference between getting a bomb, you know, dropping a bomb every round, where you can kind of just not even care if it hits or misses, versus like only being able to drop a bomb in half the rounds. Right. And if you don't drop a bomb, you know, one round, then maybe Soontir, that's the round that Soontir picks to like swoop in behind you and light you up at range 1.
Alrighty. So I think we have time for one more. Let's listen to the next one.
Hey guys, I have a question concerning the current meta. It is pretty much bombs and ordnance. And with the upcoming Guns for Hire release, you know, it will even be a condition now. So my question is how, well, not much how can you counter the meta, but what is this doing to the playing community of X-Wing as a whole, and what steps could be taken to address this issue? This is Gus Archila from Kentucky, out.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Gus. So, you know, I think the things with bombs, like, they definitely have come into their vogue right now. Like, they're really popular. And the negative play experience with bombs is that you feel like it's very similar to Autoblaster. If you've ever played against, like, multiple Autoblasters, it's the thing is, like, you don't feel, it's a feel thing. You don't feel like you have control in the game. Because the bombs go off, you roll for damage, and whatever happens, happens. This is, talking about ones with rolling. Then you add Sabine on top of that. I mean, the feeling can get pretty bad. What can we do as a community? I don't think there's anything we can do, because, at least as players, because if it's good, we are going to play it, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
There's no reason not to play things that are good. You can't be upset at people for being like, oh, why'd you bring bombs to casual night? If that's what they like, that's what they like. You know, what they're going to do, especially if maybe they don't have a ton of time to practice, or they just think it's cool. Like, I know one guy in our local area, his name's Jack Ballard. He has loved bombs since they came out. And, you know, like, I'm not going to be upset with him for him bringing it to a casual night Wednesday. Because I know that man just thinks bombs are cool, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mechanically, this is something that I do think FFG is going to need to address They've definitely doubled down on bombs. Bomblet Generator was a big step to say, hey, we really think bombs are fine. But at the same time, they are always working. You know, they've been cited as saying a year or two in the future. So they didn't see the bomb problems we were going to be having when they were making Bomblet Generator. Yeah. So we'll have to see what the answer is in the future meta of cards, of different pilots, different abilities. And if, I think if it gets bad enough, they probably will do some type of FAQ. And there's lots of different options, right? They can make you, like, let you roll defense dice against it, or...
anti-bomb card, who knows? You know, like a fizzled or something condition.
Sure.
With regards to, like, the new bomber, the BSF and everything, you're forgetting that, like, that rattle card, that one guy, Crimson Leader, can't he also do, like, another damage to you as well? So you take, like, damage from a bomb, then damage from Sabine, then damage from rattle. So that's, like, about three, at least two, but could be four damage right there, depending on what kind of bomb you use.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, of course, assuming that you stayed in the dude's firing arc. I think he's at PS 7 or 6.
Is it within your firing arc, or
yeah? You, in order to do it, he has to shoot you, and you be in the firing arc.
Oh, and then he also has to cast, cancel a die, right, or something.
Yeah.
So I think on the meta point, I think the top level at the top level, like, you can have very good games at the top level. You know, I had a lot of games that came right down to the wire where, you know, one small decision on either side could have swung the game wide open, right? And but part of that, you know, is that it's a very restrictive meta. You have to take things that are okay against bombs and okay against, you know, crazy arc dodgers like Miranda and Nim, right? And so my response was to take Kanan, where I have a rear firing arc and I have TLTs. And, you know, there were a lot of dashes, you know, there were some, you know, Fairship Rebels as well. But, you know, it's a very restrictive meta where if you're playing something that's really good, you can have a lot of fun games against stuff like bombs. And, you know, if you're playing something that has to chase the bombers or, you know, can't deal with all the arc dodging, then you're going to be in trouble, right? So I'm not sure it's like necessarily the bombs by themselves, but they're on platforms that are hard to kill, they're hard to pin down, they make you easily want to chase them, and then that, you know, plays right into the bomber strengths. And so that's kind of the trouble. As far as what we can do, I've been sort of like, I mean, this is like maybe plugging my own boat, but plugging my casual work, but I've been sort of like trying to brainstorm a format idea for you know, to bring ships with front firing arcs back. And the idea, you know, you can see it on Reddit, but basically the idea was ships can't attack outside their firing arcs. And then I try to, like, do some patches to prevent things from taking over in this environment. So, like, you can only reposition once around. It's, you know, you can't reposition multiple times. So that includes decloaks and adaptive ailerons and stuff like, you know, ships with rear firing arcs or mobile firing arcs can't take engine upgrade. And I actually banned Biggs and Bomblet Generator and other stuff like that. But, you know, I think there's probably, like, a casual format out there that might work for this. It's probably not the, you know, no generics or only generic format or whatever. It's probably a little bit trickier than that. But, you know, there's probably some sort of casual format as well that we might be able to run that, you know, brings back some of the firing arc element of X-Wing.
Go ahead.
At that part, you might want to, like, I don't know, just go back to, like, wave 1, 2, or 3 kind of stuff, because that brings it back more to the core and everything. It's easier to kind of do that if you're worried about kind of trying to get back to the front arc kind of thing.
And you know, like, this is, I think, Nate, you actually, you great transition. You didn't know what I was thinking, but I'll tell you here. I think the core thing and why the community, or a lot of the community, is feeling bad about kind of the direction of the game right now is that I would say a majority of the gamers in X-Wing play X-Wing because it's Star Wars, not because they necessarily were like, I know the only reason I got into it is like, oh, I like Star Wars. I like Star Wars spaceships. Let's play with them. Right. And the majority of people who are sucked into the game, it's not because they saw, you know, and you know, any of these extended universe ships on the table. It's because they saw X-Wings and TIE Fighters and ships that they recognized. So there's a really big part of the community right now that that aren't necessarily tournament players, because you know as tournament players, and I put myself in there, it's I'm just gonna play whatever is like I'm gonna have fun playing whatever is good, and it doesn't bother me that I'm not playing, you know, four X-Wings and I'm not flying a thematic list. But there's a lot of people in the game that need that for them to stick around. And I think for the continued future success of this game, I think that audience needs to be taken care of, because, you know, we go to a lot of events, Marcel, and we see a lot of the same people all the time. And I think, you know, if I just think about the money that just the tournament people spend on the game, I think it would be a very small percentage compared to what the casual players and hobbyists, you know, who just like the ships, pay for, you know, for FFG's X-Wing revenue. I think they need to be taken care of. How? I mean, that FFG is going to have to figure that out.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
Alrighty, so I'm going to give everybody 60 seconds, okay? Yes, 60 seconds. We are in our meta prediction. We're quick hits here. 60 seconds. What's one thing in Guns for Hire, Wave 12, or Wave 13 that you think is going to be good? I'm going to give you 30 seconds of real time to think about it and edit that out, or I'm just going to talk during these 30 seconds in anticipation. Who's going to go first? I choose Bohan. Yes. You're our guest. You go first.
All right. Deadeye Harpoon Skurgs. Those are not fun. So actually, I'm in the Vassal League. I'm actually in the Vassal League with Paul Heber, and he's already running those. I'm not looking forward to this. It's not going to be fun, especially not for Cannon Biggs. I'm going to have to put that away for a while.
There you go. Marcel.
I think it's going to be a combination of Harpoon and the 5-forward throw bomb. I mean, the 5-forward throw bomb just even adds a B-wing. You can put a B-wing with a B-wing title and Sabine, and now you have a B-wing that is throwing a friggin' cluster bomb. Not a cluster, but it's throwing a friggin' seismic bomb. Five ahead. It's just silly.
But I think a sleep hit might be the Kimojila. I feel like that's going to be like a sniper rifle of a ship, and they're really, really good high-level players that can really line things up well. It's going to be really hard to line it up, but once you get that shot and everything, that perfect sniper rifle shot, it's going to really, really, really devastate the game.
Alrighty. And then my quick hit, I don't think it's anything super secret, and that is coordinate on a super cheap ship, the Phantom 2. There is definitely some potential there to break some stuff. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Bohan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And so we stream live events and shows through our Twitch and YouTube channels. Just look up Gold Squadron Podcast and be sure to subscribe and follow. Also, join me every Friday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time for the Intergalactic Theater 5000, where we hang out, watch Vassal games, and just have a good time. Lastly, if you enjoyed the show and want to help... Lastly, if you enjoy the show and want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag, go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. Hey, Bohan, I should get one of your Vassal games on the Intergalactic Theater.
Oh, yeah, I'm being kind of lazy about scheduling things, so I'll try to let you guys know when I actually get a scheduled game.
All righty, we'll figure that out. All right, Bohan, take us away.
Okay, for Marcel, Nate, and Dion, this is Bohan Lee, Gold Squadron out.
No, so here, unedited. Okay. Tweak is not competitive. Let's continue.
Oh. Dion, that's a count. Tweak will be at a regional, and we'll win a regional.
Tweak will definitely make it to the top somehow, some way.
Nope.
Okay. We're gonna put Dion to shame, and Marcel, it's me and your job to take Thweek and get to the top table or top floor, or like the top cut with Thweek.
Forget all that. Okay. I will win a 100-plus person regional with a tweak. So.
Okay. You know what? You guys go ahead and handicap yourself.
But what do we get? What kind of like wager should we make on this? What do we get if we can actually make this happen?
It doesn't matter. I'll have your dignity. Let's continue.